Word of Mouth Wednesday. We are here for August the 11th, 2010. Here, 7 to 8 p.m. This is the Word of Mouth Wednesday show. My name's Daniel Libby here for the CKLN 88.1 FM broadcasting in Toronto. We got a big show tonight because the G20 words continue and the hope for truth into what went on in the G20. The search for truth continues, and a $45 million class action lawsuit was launched last week. Good versus the powers that be, as it were. Tonight, we're going to be talking about the G20 with local activist Derek, who's joining us in studio as well on the phone. We're going to be speaking with Thorold, Ontario resident John Prine, who was arrested during the G20 summit and is famous as the amputee that was arrested during the G20 summit. And then also we're going to be speaking a bit about what's going on with this G20 class action lawsuit. We're going to play some more words, some more audio. Plus, we got some audio from the weekend. We got a few words with Faruga from the campaign to free political prisoners in Iran. All of that and more coming up here on the Word of Mouth Wednesday. Stay tuned. We'll be right back right after we just play a clip here. Here is the speech of Sherry Good. In case you missed it last week, this is what the G20 class action lawsuit is all about.
I'm here today to represent those who were wrongfully detained by police on the weekend at the G20 summit in Toronto. I'm just an ordinary person. I'm not an organizer. I'm not an activist. But I got caught up in the police kettling operation at Queen Street and Spadina Avenue on Sunday afternoon that weekend. I just feel that what happened to me and to hundreds of others was very wrong. I live in Toronto, in downtown Toronto, on Queen Street. It shocks me that I was surrounded and held by police because I was just walking on the street where I live. At Queen and Spadina that afternoon, during a peaceful protest with no warning, we were surrounded by hundreds of police in riot gear, fully armed. We could not leave. They kept us standing in one of the worst rainstorms of the year for over 4 hours, with no information disseminated to us, no food, no water, no toilets. Sometimes the police charged into the crowd, picking out people indiscriminately for arrest and dragging them away. It was a very frightening and disturbing experience. I couldn't believe this was happening in my country. Despite what I went through, I still consider myself lucky compared to the people who were taken and held at the Eastern Detention Center. I couldn't sleep that night. I had to take off work the next day, and I suffered from a panic attack on the way to work the following day. But the biggest consequence of that weekend is that I have lost my trust in the police. Now I am nervous when I see a police car. I consistently look over my shoulder. Sadly, it will take a long time to regain that trust. I've launched this lawsuit on behalf of the class of plaintiffs to seek the truth and to hold those responsible for these actions accountable. I hope that accountability will make things better for the future for all of us. I believe this could be a difficult journey, but in the end, I consider it a privilege to be able to represent those detained without charge on the G20 weekend. You folks know what you went through. Hopefully, I can help right that wrong. Thank you.
Word up. So that was the words from Sherry Good. That was a press conference that took place last week at Queen's Park, actually. And, Sherry Good is the plaintiff in this $45 million class action lawsuit that has been launched. And actually joining us in the studio right now is someone who was actually at that press conference on last week on Friday. And we've spoken to him before the G20 and then right after the G20. And joining us today on this G20 episode, Derek, how's it going?
Pretty good. Thank you, Daniel. Thanks for having me today.
Oh, yeah. Thanks for coming in. And what was your reaction at that press conference on last week?
I think it's vital that we shed light on the truth because the mainstream media isn't covering the stories that need to be covered. So the alternative media plays a vital role. The $45 million lawsuit is standing up for people whose civil rights were trampled on. There was a lot of stories that came out that wasn't covered by the mainstream media, and that's why it's so important that we do indulge in those very important stories, for sure.
For real, for real. And one of those stories we got to get to coming up next, we're going to be speaking with John Prine, who was at this G20, and we're going to try to get him on the phone But first, it'll be a good time to just go into a G20 related track. It's the G20 protest song by The Usual Suspects and Dave Parkinson. Word up. We'll be right back on the Word of Mouth Wednesday.
Locking up the street where the leaders meet to pick the pockets of the bodies in the street. Talk about poverty, 2 billion already. Bail out the economy, couple times already. Bail out the bank, using Interact. $1.50 each time, I want my money back. Here come the protesters to challenge the investors who took all the money you've been saving for your best years. The protesters want action. They got dissatisfaction at the corporate elites taking over our streets. When the leaders come to meet, plotting to defeat indigenous peoples, migrant workers, aboriginals, women's rights, First Nations, immigration, talking about the people who have built this nation. CN Tower. No questions will be lingering about the people that they're fingering. Blame it on the anti-global activist, anarchist, terrorist. I'm sure you'll make it on the list.
One of the big topics we've been talking about for, well, since the end of June, even before June, but, you know, since the end of June, we've been talking about the aftermath of the G20, what went down that weekend. And joining us today to talk about his experience at the G20 and, you know, what he thinks about what's been going on with this is a 57-year-old resident of Thorold, Ontario. And I'd like to welcome to the show today Mr. John Prine. Hello.
Hi.
Thanks for joining us here on the show today. It's me in the studio, Daniel, and then we've also got Derek here in the studio. We got Mr. John Prine on the phone. And I was wondering, because I've been reading a lot about your story and what happened with you at the G20. You know, and in all the media, I guess, portrayals, some of the details that come across are that you're 57 years old, resident of Thorold, Ontario, an employee with Revenue Canada, and a part-time farmer. I guess, is this an accurate description of yourself?
Yes, yeah, that is.
Okay, and I guess I was wondering, you know, if you're at this G20 protest, have you been a lifelong protester? How would you describe yourself?
Well, no, not as a lifetime protester. I mean, somebody's interested in politics and that type of thing. You know, I vote every election. I'm interested in the parties and listen to politicians and what they say. But that was the first protest I've ever attended.
Wow, and you know, it was quite a protest. It was definitely the largest protest I've attended. And you know, I was covering it for this radio station and getting interviews. And then you know, I even saw a bit of what happened in Queen's Park. I know that was where you were arrested. But I guess what was your situation in Queen's Park? I guess how would you describe your arrest?
Okay, we had my wife, my daughter, and I were in the protest march. And we had separated during the march, and we had agreed to meet later on at Queen's Park. So it was my daughter and I. We went to Queen's Park. It was around 6 o'clock. And we had sat down there with two other young men. We didn't know them, but we sat down with them. And we were talking, and we were there just sitting there. And we were only there for a couple of minutes when the police line moved up to us. And I heard one of them, one of the police said, move. So we were all trying to get up. I was sitting on the ground, and I was trying to get up, and the two young men were trying to help me. And then I lost my balance. I fell back down. And then the police were, I guess, wanted to get us pushing to get us going. And Dad and my daughter told them, leave him alone. He's an above-the-knee amputee. Let him take his time. And I was trying to get back up when one of the police shouted, get the four of them. And then the next thing I know, they're just piled on top of me. The police pinned me down. One of them felt like they had a knee right on my left temple, and they were grinding my head right into the ground. My glasses came loose, and one of the police said, you're resisting arrest. And I said, I'm not resisting arrest. I couldn't move at all. I couldn't move like a centimeter. I was just pinned right to the ground. And they ripped my hands out from underneath me, forced them behind my, put them behind my back, and put on these tie wraps really hard. My glasses were laying on the ground, and they didn't seem to care. So I grabbed them in my mouth. I held the glasses in my mouth. And then one of the police, they ordered me to stand up or to walk, and I said I can't. And then one of them grabbed my prosthetic leg and ripped it off without any explanation. He ripped it off, and then he ordered me to walk, and I just looked at him. Obviously, I couldn't walk, and then he said hop, and I couldn't hop. And I said, I can't. I never hop. It's very painful. So that's when he said, one of them said, you ask for it. And then two of them grabbed me underneath my arms and started dragging me away across the pavement. And my elbows were digging right into the pavement. And I was screaming at the time, and I was still trying to hang on to my glasses in my mouth. And so they dragged me, I don't know how far, but they dragged me a bit of a ways. And then they dropped me, and some other police came up, and they hoisted me into the air. They picked me right up, and it was sort of the same routine. They were hitting me. They were accusing me of resisting arrest. One of them, they were saying I was a spitter, that I had a weapon, and things like that. These were all untrue. I couldn't resist arrest. I couldn't do anything. But they dragged me to where they had their paddy vans or paddy wagons. They threw me on the ground. They did some more hitting and kicking me, and they went through my pockets. I had about $33 on me. They took my money. They took my walking sticks. I didn't have them with me. I should say they picked them up sooner. They had my walking stick. My glasses had fallen off, and they I said my glasses, and they said, don't worry about it. So anyway, then they threw me into the van, and then I was taken to the detention center. I was so this happened on Saturday evening around 6 o'clock. Right. I was held in the detention center till Sunday evening around 9 o'clock. So I was held for over 24 hours. I was never told what I was arrested for. I was never charged. They said they couldn't find my arrest papers or. So nobody could process me. That's one of the reasons they said I was held so long without a charge. They couldn't find any paperwork for me. Sunday evening, they let me go without any charges. They didn't return my money or my walking sticks or my glasses. They didn't have those things, and they've never been returned to me. I've had to buy new glasses and new walking stick, and I suppose the money's gone. Basically, that's what about happened.
Wow, it's quite a shocking story, shocking as well because you're because of your handicap, And you're even mentioning this, that I guess when you were arrested, they immediately took off your prosthetic leg, your artificial leg?
Yeah, pretty quickly right after it. It all happened very fast within less than a minute or so, a minute or two by the time they arrested me, and then one of them yanked my leg off without any explanation, just pulled it right off. It still doesn't make any sense to me why it happened or why they did it, why the police did it. You would think that they'd be trained on if they're going to do mass arrest, that they'd got to deal with a lot of different people, how to treat people with disabilities. There are all sorts of people at the march, from very young to older people. There are people there even older than myself, and I saw people who were arrested. I was in a cell there. The youngest person I met was 17. I mean, there may have been younger people, but I saw there were older people there, older than me. Mm-hmm. It was very chaotic, and it seems they weren't prepared for what they did.
I'd like to just say, 16,000 police officers come into the city of Toronto meant to protect and serve the public. And we need to ask the right questions, like what happened and what went wrong, because the police were on record going after media in particular. They were going after freedoms from people to speak. This actual location in Queen's Park was a designated speech area. And to brutalize people in this way, it just appalls me. And I'm glad that you're on the radio today sharing your story, shedding light on the fact that, you know what, there is a reason for us to speak out, because more than ever, we need to spread the truth. And I just can't believe that they went after handicapped people and people that were disabled. There's two other guys that I know that were in wheelchairs, and they were brutalized as well. And this is like an intimidation tactic. They're meant to erode civil liberties during this 3 days to test the public, in my view.
Right, right. And we're speaking with John Prine on the phone. And you were mentioning a bit about when you were arrested or detained, and I was wondering what was going on before your arrest, because I know Queen's Park was this designated protest zone or the free speech zone. Were you at Queen's Park for most of the Saturday protest, or had you been with the march? Or
yeah, we had been with the march for most of the afternoon. Mm-hmm. So we had just come back to Queen's Park after the march, my daughter and I, around 6 o'clock, and we had planned on meeting my wife there. She had also been in the march, but she left sooner than we did, and so we were going there, and for the same reason. That's where the march had started, and as I understood it from the papers and that was the area for the for us to meet, for the people who wanted to attend the G20 that couldn't get inside the security perimeters. Like, we wanted to attend the G20. Our family did. We thought it was important. The Prime Minister attended it. We thought we should attend it. It had important issues. We were there. We thought that was our area, Queen's Park, where we could meet and, where we could be free to, to participate in the G20.
Exactly, yeah, that's exactly what I thought as well. And so I was shocked when I saw more police than I'd ever seen descend on the park and shut it down completely. Mm-hmm. Well, what I was wondering, though, because you mentioned your family was with you, what happened to your family while you were going through this ordeal, this 24 hours imprisonment?
Well, my daughter was arrested right beside me, so of course I was very concerned about her, what was happening to her. And then I knew my wife would be looking for us. I didn't know if she had been arrested. I was hoping not, mm-hmm. And she wasn't arrested. But during that whole time, she didn't know where we were, what had happened to us. We sort of just disappeared off the face of the earth. And, when I was in there, being held in the detention, I wasn't allowed to make a phone call or, do any of the things that you expect to happen after you're being arrested, like find out what I was charged with, or contact an attorney or any of those things.
Well, this seems extreme, what was going on, and then how you didn't have these things people would think as a right at this detention center. And I know I've heard different descriptions of it, of what the detention center was like. We even had a candidate for mayor on a few weeks ago who was held in this detention center, describe it as the cattle corral. How would you describe as the conditions inside? What was it like?
Well, it wasn't very good, especially with getting water. I think I was arrested around 6 o'clock, and we were asking for water. First, we asked for water in the paddy wagons. They were very hot in there. And then finally, when we got to the detention center, again, we were asking for water. It took them like hours. I know it was at least 6 or 7 hours later after I had been arrested until we finally got some water. Food came much later on. And then water, they didn't bring it out regularly. They would only give us one cup at a time. About the third time we got water, it was dirty. I'm not exactly sure why, but it was dirty water. But I was thirsty. And I wasn't getting much of it, so I drank it anyways. Some people refused to drink it, but I took my chances. Some things for me personally, they gave me a wheelchair when I was in the cages they put us in. When I got there, they said they couldn't give me my leg because it could be used as a weapon. And so when I was in being held in the cage, they gave me a wheelchair to use. But all the time when I was in there, they had still had my hands in handcuffs. Although they took them from behind my back, I had my hands cuffed in front of me. And all the people I was with in the area of the detention center I was in, they kept their handcuffs on all the time, which I didn't understand because we were in secure cages, you know, in a secure facility. I didn't see the need to keep handcuffs on all the time because they're painful to wear after a while, and sometimes some of them were on very tight. Mm-hmm. I just didn't see a need for some of the things they were doing.
Right. And I guess, you know what, I'm wondering what's the reaction been like from, I guess, for you locally? I guess, have you told the story to the people in Thurold, Ontario? How have people reacted in your community?
Varies. Some people are very supportive. Other people take the attitude that we shouldn't have gone there to begin with, which, you know, doesn't seem right in a democratic society that we shouldn't attend such an important political function. You know, freedom of speech and the right assembly, those are all important issues, and they all dovetailed, you know, in the G20, G8. That's why, from what I saw, tens of thousands of people attended there, because it's a very important issues for Canada and you know, for our rights and all those types of things.
For real. And I just wanted to just to ask you again, because I think you mentioned it, but you weren't charged with anything?
No, I was not.
Right. And your daughter wasn't either?
No. My daughter was a charge, but then they withdrew the charges before they released her.
Wow.
So they accused her doing something, but then they withdrew them and then released her.
And that seems to be the tactic. A lot of innocent people were arrested over Queen of Spadina, and they detained people for over 5 hours in the rain, women and children shaking. They put them on buses, and then they let them go. So they didn't want to have that record to show like an arrest. It was just meant to intimidate people, take away their civil liberties for like that 3-day summit. We see a lot of that, and it's appalling.
That's what I was thinking when they kept holding me there, and they wouldn't process me. And I thought, you know, what's going on? Why don't they process me? I usually heard that they take your picture and then you make a promise to appear in court for whatever the charges were. And you know, that would have been, I guess, a lot better if they had done it that way. They would have cleared people out faster, but it seemed they wanted to hold on to people. And after a while, I thought they were just hanging on to us until the summit was over.
Right, and this, because of all this, you know, what we've been able to find out since the G20, and you know, all these stories that people have involving their civil liberties. I know that there are like legal actions going on. I was wondering, you know, have you filed any charges, or are you planning to join the class action lawsuit, or have you decided anything like that?
No, I haven't filed any charges or anything. I've made a complaint to the Independent Police Commission, and as far as the other things, the class action and or doing other things, I'm sort of still up in the air. I did call the ombudsman's office on it, but they said they really couldn't do anything to help me because they said it was they can't investigate the police. So really, those are the two things I've done so far, the independent review and the ombudsman's office.
I see. Oh, all right. And I guess has this whole experience, like in general, has this like at all discouraged you from protesting? Do you still feel strongly about protesting?
Well, I feel strongly about politics still, but as far as protesting goes, I guess I'd be very cautious the next time. I know it's caused me a lot of anxiety, and for a long time I've been hurting from it, my shoulders, my head, my elbows, just getting over that, the physical pain of it, but there's still all the stress and the anxiety and that has come from it.
For real, yeah, and I'm glad that we were able to speak with you today, Mr. John Prine, and I'm glad that some of your story's been able to get out in the media, and yeah, thanks a lot for joining us.
Thank you, John.
You're welcome.
Thanks.
Bye-bye.
All right, and that was John Prine of, he's an employee of Revenue Canada. He's also a part-time farmer, a resident of Thorold, Ontario, and he was arrested during the G20, and that was a bit of his story. And I'd also like to thank Derek for sitting in on that interview and for helping get connected with John Prine. And we'll be right back here on the Word of Mouth Wednesday. We got more to go through in the show, but we'll just throw it to a track by 4D. It's a track called "Whose Streets Are Streets." Word up, Toronto, wake up. Word of Mouth, 7:29 p.m. Word is bond. Keep it real.
We had enough of this G20. We had enough of Dalton. We had enough of Harper. Time to get rid of him.
What's country coming to? We let the select few act like we dumb fools. 1.3 bill to control the black talk, then justify the actions of spending because of black bloc. Now the people ain't feeling that here. HST, G20 secret laws all this year. I think it's time we let them know that they tactics ain't working. No more wool over the eyes of the class that are working. The media only showing what they want us to see. So we have to press for the truth where the knowledge is free. Grab your copies of Basics, opportunity for fight back. Papers of the people, it's our people that write that. This ain't 86, Fort Pickens, Geronimo. We need to expose the truth, 2010 to Guantanamo. Abuse of power situations and the torture plenty. So come together. Together and your huff G20. We need to take the city back, they don't treat us as equal. Enough of this issue, all power to the people. They beat up protesters singing no Canada, our home and native land, but they really no fan of us. They handle us in an attempt to dismantle us. No cops are searching women, probably got it on camera. Secret laws passed by Dalton, villainous ways. They increase police presence, it's a military state. Public Works Protection Act is a joke. Empowers cops and render cops to harass our working folk. Our city's cowards rolling masks, rubber bullets and tear gas. But the roots hold the blade of the grass. Catch the metaphor, brothers and sisters. It's time to organize and realize that the system dismissed us. While people getting enraged, locked up in a cage. The hood is just a trap for us. TCHC is a flop, just a front for our cops. No repairs, bed bugs up in the mattress. We'll be right back. they don't treat us as equal. This ish, all power to the people. Ish, this grind time and people ain't recession proof. We victims of the system, brainwashing from a youth. They trying to hold us down, putting cops in the schools. Can't pay for textbooks, but they can pay a pig or two. You see, the politics are holding us down. There's no social change when liberals and the PC around. So we need change, but where's the Obama for me? We still got youth in the streets who ain't got nothing to eat. They bail out banks in the industries. No power to the people, even though we can't vote, they never treat us as we equal. So what do we do when the system corruption and lies? They give tax cuts to the rich and higher taxes for the little guys. They make cuts to the library centers and schools and put more pigs in the sty. They trying to play us for fools. They tear down the social housing to put up condos, take out the no frills and price drops and put up a longos. But this ain't no surprise, history shall repeat it. We need to revolutionize and leave the system defeated. I can't take this no more, no more carrying on. So I go ayah to the Zion and fire upon our Babylon. The city back, they don't treat us as equal. Enough of this issue, all power to the people.
Word up, Word of Mouth Wednesday back here, 7:32 p.m. This is CKLN 88.1 FM broadcasting in Toronto from the campus of Ryerson University. And we've got our G20, recap show. This is our class action special. And the phone request line, if you want to call in at all to get in the G20 discussion, you can call us at 416-595-1478. 416-595-1478 is a special number just for today to call in to the studio. And we still got Derek here in the studio. And Derek... I noticed you on last week when I was watching. I watched the whole press conference of that took place at Queen's Park when Sherry Good filed the class action lawsuit, and she's the plaintiff in the class action lawsuit. And then I noticed that you were in the crowd. And then I also noticed that you got interviewed as well later on CP24 talking about this situation. I guess. What was this experience like? Like, you just went down to Queen's Park and you, you found that you, like, just all the media was there and then they decided to interview you, or?
Yeah, I basically read an article in the morning about 10 o'clock and, I heard that they're going to have a class lawsuit take place. So I wanted to go out and check it. I think it was important to go there just to see how the media was covering the story, because G20 has died down in the sense of mainstream media for the last month or so. So when I was there, I was the only protester there pretty much. I was surprised, to say the least. But I wanted to get involved, and some of the media outlets wanted to interview me. So they set up an interview with Pulse 24 2 hours later. And I was kind of unsure if I wanted to do that. I don't need public attention, and I didn't want to be on camera. But I thought it was important to talk about the real truth and the news that mainstream media isn't covering, especially with the amputee and how he was brutalized and victimized by the police. He's an innocent person. He has human rights, and he shouldn't have been treated in that manner. And I just cared about our city. And I wanted to know why they put 16,000 police officers in our city where we're supposed to be protected. They're supposed to serve us. Meanwhile, when it came down to it, they brutalized a lot of people. And we know that their first and foremost job was to protect these foreign policy elites, you know. And how do they separate our people from these leaders with a fence? You know, if these leaders were doing right in the world, why would they have to have a fence around themselves? We would have been welcoming them into our city. But it seems to be not that case. They pass laws in secret. The Ontario Public Works Act came out to be a five-meter rule. Chief Blair lied to the public deliberately. And basically, it was a snatch-and-grab tactic. They just started searching illegally hundreds and hundreds of people. They broke the law. You know, they trampled on civil rights. When they had the ability to apprehend black bloc suspects on that, I think it was Saturday afternoon, they were given orders to stand down and not apprehend any of these people and protect our small businesses and the community. So basically, the next day they went and just arrested innocent people in mass arrest. Over 800 people were arrested on one day. It goes down in history as the most mass arrest ever. You know, $1 billion, and it's supposed to be over $2 billion now, that was spent of our taxpayers' money to protect this city. It failed on such a monumental level. We don't even know where the money went. We don't even have a breakdown. We don't even know what conflicts of interest took place. You know, that fence came out initially. It was in the Toronto Star. It was $5.5 million to build a fence in this city to divide the elites from the public. And then it doubled in cost. So it wasn't only $5.5 million. It went to $9.4 million of our taxpayers' money.
Wow.
So when we see this money was being spent recklessly and the public's safety wasn't an interest, we have to be activists. We have to be speaking out against these crimes against humanity, which I call them. Because when you start going after like handicapped people and amputees, and you stop caring about this city, we have to hold people accountable. Justice prevails, the truth prevails, and we're not going to shut up. We're going to keep this alternative media going. We're going to cover the real news, and we're not going to be intimidated by the police tactics. You know, 3 days, they just totally eroded civil rights. It's never been done in history. You know, it's called the Ontario Public Works Act. This kind of reminds me of the Patriot Act in America. Mm-hmm. You know, after 9/11, there's a catastrophe, and then they start taking away incrementally our rights. Freedom of speech is such a vital aspect. Protesting has been so important throughout our history. It's made human life. We have fought for our freedoms throughout history. Martin Luther King, John F. Kennedy, Gandhi, they were all protesters. So how are you going to stop that? You can't, because freedom of speech is our weapon. We have our voices, we have our cameras. That's the only weapons we have. We don't have shields, we don't have guns, we don't have intimidation tactics.
That's true. I'm just nervous that part of the reason why, if this was a whole strategy, if this was a whole developed tactic, a developed plan by the powers that be, is that they were trying to, you know, what I fear is that they were trying to discourage protesting in the future by, you know, and, you know, with what I've seen for the past 6 weeks, this hunt for the Black Bloc vandals that's been going on, just sort of, you know, it gets me thinking, well, you know, here are some of the reasons why this class action lawsuit has been launched related to the G20. We're talking about a $45 million lawsuit. Here is the lawyer, Eric Gillespie, speaking about the class action lawsuit. Here are some of the reasons from that press conference that took place last week.
The thing I'd like to speak briefly about is why we believe that this claim is very appropriate as a class proceeding. First, there appear to be hundreds and hundreds of potential claimants here who experienced essentially the same types of issues and concerns. Many of those people are probably not in a position to bring their claims forward on their own. These claims are likely to be complex. They involve serious legal issues, they involve charter issues, and frankly, it's difficult for many people to imagine that the majority of the people affected by this would be in a position to advance their own claims on their own. So access to justice, access to the legal process is one of the key goals of class action legislation, and we believe there's a good argument for the fact that this claim meets that goal. In addition, if all of those claims were to come forward individually, you would literally have hundreds and hundreds of individual actions before the court. That takes not only the resources of the plaintiffs, but more importantly, the resources of our court system. And one of the goals of class actions is to encourage economy and efficiency in the court process. That goal, we believe, can be appropriately satisfied in this case by proceeding as a class. Finally, I think it's fair to say that the images that many Canadians witnessed on that weekend are images that people generally would not want to see again. And one of the goals of a class action is to see if ultimately the plaintiff is successful, if there are ways of ensuring that situations like that don't occur again in the future. That will be one of the other key objectives of this particular claim.
All right, and that's Eric Gillespie speaking about why this class action lawsuit has been filed. We're talking about a $45 million lawsuit. Actually, here is just another clip of Eric Gillespie speaking about how the $45 million figure was arrived at here from the Q&A at the press conference.
The $45 million calculation was arrived at by examining some of the existing case law in other jurisdictions and here in Ontario regarding the range of damages that would normally be expected. So given that we know that there's at least approximately 800 class members, that was the basis for the calculation. The cases related to damages, one of the most recent ones comes out of the United States, and it is from Washington, where a eventual judgment settlement has been reached that adds up to about $13.7 million on behalf of 400 class members for what appear to be very similar circumstances, at least to us.
All right, so that was some words there with Eric Gillespie, the lawyer in the class action lawsuit, one of the lawyers representing the class action lawsuit, Sherry Good, which is taking place locally. It's one of the things that's going on. There's a $45 million class action lawsuit that has been announced. And it's G20 class action, and then there is the Ontario Ombudsman is doing some sort of investigation. But as we heard John Prine mention, I guess he can't really investigate the police or something. When John Prine called him and told him his story, and then there's another one that's the Police Review Board. That's like the police services. Independent, like their own independent review board within the police service, is doing one for the Toronto Police, I guess. There is still, I guess there, the main movement after the G20, when there was a few protests right after, we're talking about a public inquiry. Derek, what do you think about a public inquiry? Do you think that still hope? Or
I do think there's still hope. I just think we need to wake in the masses. As a Canadian, we need to stand up for other Canadians. Human rights were trampled on. We need to stand up. We need to speak out. This is the time that we stand up for our country, because a lot of these laws going through are going to change our rights as we know it. And it's just incremental right now. 3 days, it was a total power grab. So basically, a public inquiry is vital for the future of this country. And we need to call for it. We need to write to our politicians. We need to send emails. We need to demand the truth outside of internal reviews. Because, you know, we have numerous stories of secret laws being passed, weapon cache. They had weapons that weren't even weapons. And they came out and they lied to the public. And this was faked. It's a photo op. You know, people were being detained at the Toronto Film Studios. It's pretty fictitious. You know, a lot of these crimes were committed against innocent people. And they weren't arrested. They were just released. Intimidation tactics just kept happening. They went after the helpless, the homeless, the handicapped. This is appalling. And as a society, you know what? They picked Toronto for a specific reason, because we are laid back and most of us don't care. That's why they did it, because you don't care, you don't vote. And this is the time that, you know, you need to take politics in your own hand. You need to be involved. You think freedoms are always going to be there and you never have to fight for them? Of course, they know. They're attacking us. They're attacking freedom. Mm-hmm. You know, 3 days they were attacking us, innocent people. We just had cameras and we had our voices. How are they going to stop us? It's up to us to spread the truth, to pay attention to the real news, to investigate yourself, to follow the news stories that you want to hear.
For real, yeah, and check out therealnews.com. You can check out pressfortruth.ca. You can check out Toronto Media Co-op. Check out some independent media sources as well when you're looking into this G20. But, you know, also check out some of the mainstream media. There's, you know, there has been some words getting across. Even Derek, the guy you just heard, was even on CP24. And if they're willing to speak with Derek, then, they're at least willing to get a different viewpoint on, from somebody who was at the protests. you know, still protesting with this G20 class action lawsuit. And, you know, Derek, you just brought up some local politics. That's why I'd like to play this clip now, because we haven't got to this clip, haven't got to play it yet. But it's from the actual Toronto mayor's debate. There's still there's five chosen candidates for mayor that have been allowed in all the debates. And this clip actually features the five: Sarah Thompson, George Smitherman, Rocco Rossi, Joe Pantalone, and Rob Ford, speaking about this. Here's their reaction to the G20. This is from the CP24 mayor's debate that took place in July. Here's some of the candidates.
Here's what they first.
I think that there were a group of thugs that just ruined the event for some real legitimate protesters.
So what should have happened?
I really believe the thugs should have been managed well, but apparently they weren't prepared for that. Unfortunately, the legitimate protesters who really wanted to be heard couldn't be heard because all the focus and media attention went towards these damages.
I thought what was disturbing. I live in neighborhoods that were affected by Allen Gardens and by Young College and such, is that in a circumstance where there were 15,000 additional police officers in the city of Toronto, that the 5,500, I think, approximate police officers that we have in Toronto on that day weren't assigned to actually protect those things, those neighborhoods, in the way that they normally would. And I think that was really disturbing to people, that these folks were allowed to go about their activities on the Saturday where the police presence was very, very light. I didn't call for a public inquiry. I said an independent investigation. And some of what the Police Service Board is focused on is satisfactory to me. I never used the word inquiry. That has very special meaning. And I support Chief Blair to... I think he's best positioned of all the leaders of police that I've seen to learn and apply lessons going forward that can help our city. But certainly it's a situation like the one in London where a relatively small number of people can really mess things up for everybody else. But I really felt bad that so much personal property and the businesses of independent people were subjected to that damage, and that the federal government has not offered yet any compensation.
Yes, they have.
Okay, Joe Pantalone, and then we'll come back to Rocco.
I think it was a nightmare, actually. It was hard to believe that was the city that all of us live in and love. You know, it was surreal, you know, what was happening, and all of us were watching it. I think that the police...
What should have happened on Saturday?
Well, first of all, what should have happened is that Mr. Harper should have listened to the... to the city of Toronto,
okay,
including me as
mayor. What should have happened on Saturday?
Well, it should have been held at Exhibition Place to begin with. You know, I know I negotiated with them, but in my opinion, it would have
made no difference to Yonge Street.
Your opinion? That's Miller's opinion. He's the one that's...
Well, I'm sorry. I'm the chair of Exhibition Place, and I negotiated with the federal people, so it was my opinion, and I was acting on it.
Okay, so your answer is that should have been at Exhibition Place.
Exhibition Place would have made...
We'll come back to you.
Okay, Exhibition Place would have made no difference to what happened on Yonge Street, because that wasn't anywhere near...
What should have happened? If you're a mayor, what should have happened on Saturday?
I think that the police did... as good a job as they could under very difficult circumstances. Unfortunately, on Sunday, there are some issues that have been raised that the chief himself and the Police Services Board have said, look, we need an independent review. They're putting terms of reference, not a full public inquiry. We went through MFP. We saw multiple years where the only people who benefited were lawyers who got to build more cottages up in Muskoka beside Joe, who said that's where we all should have gone.
You're against the inquiry, Sarah, and then Rob Ford. Joe, hang on. Sarah, you've got the floor.
I agree that the civil inquiry is much better. The public inquiry, as Mr. Rossi says, is just a long, drawn-out process. We can get the same results. I believe in Chief Blair. I think he's doing a good job. You got to remember, with thousands and thousands of people here, there were only a few that really did some damage, and it's very hard to control that. But as well, we got to remember the police made some mistakes too, and they should be held accountable so they can learn from their mistakes.
Okay, well, Rob Ford,
you either support the police or you don't support the police here. This is black or white. I support the police. You know what? They were taunted. Their horses are getting knocked off their horses. Their police cars are getting burned. And you're sticking up for the protesters. You know what?
Should there have been more action on Saturday?
Absolutely. If I was the mayor, I would have told the chief, and I'm not going to control the police force whatsoever, but I would have said to Chief Blair, I said, well, please move in on Saturday night. I would have asked them to move in.
Hello,
you know what? Because we would have sat here and look what happened. And these police were taunted. They were spat at. There were bottles were throwing at them. And you know what?
Judgment.
And you just sit here and let and take it. And then on Sunday, you go in there. And you do what the police, I think, should have done Saturday. I think the police were more than polite to the protesters.
Do you think that the mayor should direct the police?
No, I don't. But I said on Saturday night, I think we should give them directions. That we should ask Chief Blair to say, "Do go move it."
Now it's asked.
There was people calling.
Do you think that the mayor should give directions to
the office saying, "What's going on?"
I'm scared. I'm sure that's the case.
I said, "Listen, let's ask the police chief to move in quickly." The police were more than polite.
But on the issue of separation of responsibilities,
and all I'm saying, I don't believe in a public inquiry.
Were you really in your office? I don't believe
in having this judicial review. This is going to cost millions and millions of dollars. Look at the images. Look at the police. But look at these people getting beaten up. The police were getting, everything was going on. It was unbelievable what was going on.
But you said that as a mayor, you would direct the police. You just said that.
I would ask the police chief to move in.
That's what I would have done as a mayor.
Do you study the appalling situation at all?
What does George Wash have to do with
separation of responsibilities?
It's exactly about the issue about the separation of
responsibilities. The police I feel sorry for. You know what?
Gentlemen,
they should have done this earlier. Sorry.
Joe Pantalone, you have the floor.
Yeah, we do not know everything that has happened. Okay, that's a fact. Because even those criminal elements that were doing it, they're innocent until proven guilty, and the police cannot reveal what they did or didn't do. That would be through a court process.
So that's what the words were from some of the candidates for mayor. Now, that was just the chosen five that got on CP24, and the chosen five are, they're in the media more than a lot of the other candidates. I think there's close to 40 candidates now for mayor. I don't have the exact number, but there's a lot more than the five that you just heard there. But those were the big five, and so it's important to hear their words because they're the top five leaders in the polls for being mayor, and so one of them most likely would be the mayor. So that's some of the words on the G20. I'm not sure what all this legal stuff will lead to, I don't know. With a lot more people looking into this, I guess it is. It is good to keep looking, I guess. We're not trying to discourage anybody from protesting by bringing up all these sad stories, every week. But we're just trying to bring the truth of what actually happened at the G20. And we're still out. We're still out on the streets. On Saturdays, usually with Toronto Truth Seekers, and I know Derek's been down in a lot at Yonge and Dundas Square too. Toronto Truth Seekers at Yonge Dundas Square on Saturdays have been doing a lot of activism. Some of the signs out there you can see: G20 riots was an inside job. G20 Toronto riots were staged, or some of the signs that I think the Hofstra brothers brought out. So Toronto Truth Seekers is still out doing their thing. Hopefully more activism will be going on. Here's just a quick interview I'm going to play that took place on Saturday when I went down to the Toronto Truth Seekers meetup. I saw there was another protest going on at Yonge Dundas Square on Saturday, and it was a protest against stoning in Iran. So here is Faruga speaking about the issue of stoning in Iran. Here is that quick interview. Word.
Stop stoning women in Iran.
Word up, this is Daniel Libby for the Word of Mouth Wednesday on CKLN. Do you mind introducing yourself?
Yeah, my name is Farouk.
Stop stoning women
and, in Iran. And what's going on here? I noticed that there's a protest. People are holding stop the execution signs. What?
Yeah, we are from the International Committee Against Stoning and Execution. We are here, as you know, Sakina Ashtiani is sentenced to death by stoning by the Islamic regime for adultery. So we have international campaign in support of Sakina, to save Sakina's life and to put pressure on the Islamic regime for their 3 decades of barbaric laws like stoning and execution. We have so far 58 organizations. The human rights organization, freedom-loving individuals, are gathered together to save Sakina's life, to put pressure on the Islamic regime for their barbaric laws. But so far, they postponed Sakina's execution for a little while, but we heard that the Islamic regime want to execute her soon. So this is why we are here. We're going to put pressure on the Islamic regime, hopefully, and by the international community, international pressure on the Islamic regime would save Sakina's life.
Stop stoning women in Iran.
Right, and we're here at Yonge Dundas intersections right in downtown Toronto. And I noticed that on the ground there is a there's a poster on the ground, and there's people signing it. What's going on in the with this?
Yeah, this is the piece of material. It says "Stop stoning in Iran." So people are signing this, then showing their support to Sakina's and all the people of Iran. We're gonna send a copy of all these signatures to Amnesty International and all those human rights groups.
Stop stoning women in Iran.
And I'm glad that you're out on the street trying to get the word out on this, because I don't think a lot of people know about this and this is going on. But is there anywhere you'd recommend for people to get more information or to research?
Yeah. We have, as I said, we are from International Committee Against Stoning and Execution. We have a paper that we're distributing it to people. There is a website in the bottom of the paper. So people can go to our website.
I would be dead now.
They can show their anger to Iranian regime, just the pressure on the Islamic regime. They can sign our petition in support of Sakina's, to save Sakina's life. They can do a lot of things. And this human chain in the world in support of humanity in Iran, in support of people of Iran in their struggle against the Islamic regime, is a wonderful showcase of power of the humanity. If you go to the websites, different websites, you see how much support you have. It's out there already to support Sakina's life, to support people of Iran in their struggle.
Stop stoning women in Iran.
Thank you very much. Thank
down
you.
With the Islamic Republic.
I believe together we can make a difference in the world. Thank you.
Word up. So, thanks to Faruga for speaking with us at the Yonge Dundas Square on Saturday. I was out there with my camera, and then I started filming because they had this big mat that everyone was stopping on the street and signing. And it had all the Save Sakina Mohammed Ashtiani campaign. And then International Committee Against Execution was what they were protesting, campaign to free political prisoners in Iran. And then some of the websites you can check out, notonemoreexecution.org or the International Committee Against Stoning at stopstoningnow.com. That's more info. You can look into this, and I got a clip on YouTube too if you want to check out what it was like. Check out youtube.com/supportlocalscene as one of that's my latest clip on there is about this free political prisoners in Iran campaign. But I've got most of my videos before that are G20 related. So in case you're doing research in that, also check out youtube.com/supportlocalscene and, search on YouTube. And, just a word about that Iran clip, just because Iran's in the news a lot. And that situation, there might not be that many words on it in the news. So it's good to see that people are protesting it to get the word out. But of course, this, you don't want it to lead it towards this demonization of Iran that we're seeing. So I'm just hoping for justice for the people in Iran, and then also hoping that the powers that be, that the G20 countries don't go to war with Iran. That's about it here for us here on Word of Mouth Wednesday for today. I just want to thank again Derek for joining us here in the studio. Thanks a lot.
Thank you.
All right. Thanks. Thanks to Derek. And also thank our guest at the top of the show, which was John Prune, speaking about his G20 arrest story. Plug one more website to hear, G20Justice.com. A lot more info on G20Justice.com. And then I'd like to throw it to our next show here on CKLN. Stay tuned to 88.1 FM. Word of Mouth Wednesday is wrapping up here. My name's Daniel Libby, and stay tuned for the Blues Dr. Julie Hill, who's here with the Blue Remedy coming up next. Word up, word of mouth, word is bond, word out.